Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.
It's the Capital Connection. Hi, I'm David Gustina. Joining us this week is Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday. We welcome you back, Yancey.
Good to be back, Dave.
Well, yeah, this is the time to have you, too, because now we have witnessed the governor, that's Governor Kathy Hochul of New York's State of the State address. A big word. It's all over the place these days. Affordability, also child care, a whole bunch of issues that I'd like to talk to you about, Yancey. I see by the article you produced for Newsday, Hochul focuses on affordability and Trump. We also see that she's partnering with the New York City mayor, Zohran Mamdani, on universal child care, probably one of the biggest points of the entire address.
Yeah, if you wanted to look at where she got the biggest applause lines or reactions in her roughly 48-minute or so speech, it was when she came out for universal child care, which we knew already knew she would because, as per custom with a lot of governors, they kind of one by one leak out some of the initiatives for the state of the state ahead of time to make sure they get plenty of coverage. So she was on board for that. And then the other big reaction she got was especially when she said that New York would stand up to the Trump administration on various fronts, including the aggressive tactics of immigration officers and doing some other things, such as New York State setting its own vaccine standards with the federal government kind of retreating on that issue.
Well, and, you know, you could predict that the Republicans were going to come out and attack this proposal as not affordable. And, you know, the idea of doing this for the entire state, I've seen some estimates around $15 billion to do that. And the governor doesn't want to tax the rich. She's open to, quote, revenue raisers. So will the money have to come from somewhere, Yancey?
Well, a couple of things for listeners to be aware of. First of all, you'll notice in a state of the state, everything is sort of thematic. It's aspirational. There's not a lot of concrete details. And so you didn't notice any kind of dollar figure on her proposal. And you also, importantly, did not see a timeline about how quickly she would want to get to universal child care or universal pre-K or any of these other things. So what I imagine that means is, because this is typically how governors do it, you say you want to reach something like child care for all or access for all. So you phase it in over several years, and you might not start the first year, and that's the way you sort of walk out the initiative to not have it cost so much in the very first year. And the other thing for listeners to know is here we are in the middle of the week, beginning of next week on Tuesday, the governor will have to unveil her budget proposal, present her ideas to the state legislature for how to get us through next year's budget. That's when you'll see some details about, okay, does she really want to start paying for child care now? Do they really want to launch the program now? Sometimes, honestly, programs need a year or so lead time to get up anyway. So I wouldn't be surprised to see a verbal commitment to the idea, but maybe it's phased in over several years. And towards your other point about taxes, I also think that the governor, she's always found her own sort of sweet spot on taxes as being sort of the thing that plants her as a moderate Democrat, because she never wants to go as far as the more progressives in the state legislature want to go. And she's campaigning for re-election, as are all 213 state legislators this year. And she's going to be facing pressure from left and right. And so she's going to want to be in the middle. On taxes, she will probably stick with her mantra that she's had for several years of not raising the income tax rates. But she also wants to do things for the left to make sure they're on board for her for the fall. I mean, New York Mayor Zohran Mamdani has certainly captured the energy of the Democratic Party. He calls himself a Democratic Socialist, so he's far more to the left than Kathy Hochul. She wants to make sure she is in tune with them, and he endorses her, and he gets the energy of her. She gets the energy, rather, of his movement. And at the same time, not go too far to give the right some ammunition as well.
Yeah. Isn't it a victory for Mamdani, you know, who is really being watched closely, probably because in many ways he's a Democratic Socialist. This gets the governor on his side as he was there in Albany yesterday and has to come back for money.
Absolutely, absolutely. And he's also, you know, look, he's got a long wish list for a mayor as well. And I think what we're seeing, at least so far, look, he's only been in office, 2 weeks. What we're seeing is probably a realistic approach where even if he has a long wish list, he's not going to necessarily expect politically that all of it gets done in the first few months, maybe even the first year of a tenure. You have 4 years to get things done, and sometimes you have to strategically roll out your agenda towards getting them done. Sometimes other mayors have failed to see that or pushed too quickly. We saw a couple of mayors ago, Bill de Blasio and Andrew Cuomo at loggerheads on schools, among other issues, and it became sort of an ego and financial clash. I think that Mamdani, so far, look, he's got a lot of, he's a young, fresh face. He's new in politics, but he's also brought on board his team some veteran hands who know how to get stuff done in New York State. And I think the signals that you're getting is that they're going to take a very strategic approach about how hard to push in the first few months of his tenure and in the first few months of a year that's very important for the governor's reelection chances.
Yeah, and as you mentioned before, she's really gone hard after Washington and the Trump administration. And of course, we've been seeing the temperature rising considerably when it comes to ICE in the communities across this country, most notably Minneapolis. But it's been happening in New York as well. And she in the dress says she's standing up to ICE agents who are abusing their power. Quote, New York is a state that was built by immigrants, and we don't forget where we came from. She wants people to be able to sue if they don't have a judge's order, signed judge's order, and their rights are taken advantage of.
Last year, or the 25, there was an incident out in Cayuga County. I believe it was Cayuga County, and just outside of, not far from Syracuse, where a factory was raided by ICE agents. And the agents had ostensibly told, according to the press coverage, told the owner of the factory, we have warrants, we're looking for somebody specifically who is a wanted criminal. What ended up happening is they ended up going in and taking custody of a lot of people there. And it turns out that, again, according to the reports, they did not have a judicial warrant. It was more of a civil warrant to look for only had a limited reach. And so that's what she's referring to when she says, ostensibly, look, if you're going after criminals, wanted criminals, fine. But if you're going to go into a place, you're going to need a warrant signed by a judge. You're not going to sort of pull this sleight of hand like what we saw out in this central New York factory. And that was one of the things that got her a huge ovation from the crowd at the Empire State Plaza during her speech.
Interestingly enough, the governor, a Democrat, of course, Governor Hochul, is championing nuclear production, nuclear energy. She wants to raise nuclear production to 5 gigawatts. I spoke with the Assembly Minority Leader, Will Barclay, last week, and he says folks in Oswego County are gung-ho to get more nuclear power there.
You know, we did a story in the fall leading up to New Year's here that took a look at the whole issue of the Climate Act in New York and the goals for New York to reach for green energy, and sort of looking at the reality that 5 years ago when it was passed, I mean, in the 5 years since it was passed, a lot has changed. I mean, you had the market effects from the pandemic. You had Trump returning to office and putting in all sorts of roadblocks against wind energy. We've got a slew of sort of really nitty-gritty power transmission issues in New York, which are sometimes don't get the big headlines that, say, a big offshore wind operation does. But that's been a real issue for New York's power system. And so you see the governor sort of openly kind of rethinking New York's climate goals. They've done a couple of things. They have signaled, New York had a law that was going to mandate going forward that buildings be all electric and not rely on gas and other things. That was going to kick in this year for buildings going forward of certain size. But there's also a lawsuit that's going on. And in the fall, one little thing that happened within that lawsuit is the Hochul administration acknowledged that it will not push forward on those goals until the lawsuit is finished, until it's completed, until it reaches some sort of resolution. And along with that, to get back to what you said about nuclear, I think the governor's administration has said, look, we're all for reaching the climate goals, but right now there is no realistic way to bring on enough wind and solar quickly enough to reach any of those goals. So we have to rethink some other options. And that's why she's pushing nuclear power. And not only is she pushing it, but now she's pushing it aggressively, because last year when she first announced it, the goal was to add 1 gigawatt of power. And now yesterday she said she wants to make it 5. Those are numbers that can be lost on me and a lot of listeners, but to what that actually means. But what that means is a number of plants that she would like to license and get up and running. But the other thing to know about is that's a long, long process for a nuclear power plant to get up and running. If it happens, she could set the groundwork, but it's likely it would not happen while she is governor.
But it is interesting in an election year, and you know, it's obvious she's reading the tea leaves with this nuclear thing, whether you agree with it or not. Federal government is not cooperating on the climate agenda. They don't even view climate change as a thing anymore. So you can see why she's shifting her priorities. I also wonder if it works for her electorally. In other words, I hear a lot of Republicans liking that idea. I'm wondering if she gets some independents and some purples along the way because they say, hey, this is a smart idea.
You know, the state agencies that oversee this process about a week ago released some information about how many communities have inquired and basically said, yeah, hey, we would be open to being the host to a new plant. And I want to say it was at least 8 municipalities or counties that had put in for it, and all sorts of other entities that want to get involved in it. All of them upstate, you know, Syracuse area, Lake Ontario area, predominantly sometimes out towards Lake Erie, highly Republican counties who are itching to get some sort of economic development. And to go back to where we started on this about Hochul trying to place herself as a pragmatic, moderate Democrat, well, certainly this energy push kind of keeps her in that category.
Well, one of the major things we've heard about over and over again, and this is not only in New York, it's all across the country, is affordable housing. And she addressed that in the speech this week.
She did, in a way that laid out some goals, but they weren't real concrete. Listen, to go back a few years, I think Hochul kind of learned a political lesson on the housing issue.
Yeah, she local jurisdiction.
Yeah, you're right. You're referring to a proposal from a couple of years ago where essentially in the you know, the goal that a lot of people share to have more housing and have some of that be affordable housing, she threw out an idea to jumpstart it, which in a sense would allow for some override of local zoning laws. And man, that went over like a lead balloon, especially among her suburban Democrats who support her in, say, Westchester County and on Long Island. They were calling this an extinction level event for Democrats. So she backed off of that. She changed that whole policy. Instead of making it so much of a stick approach, she put out more carrots, if you will, in terms of money and incentives to grow housing. Yesterday, she again said, look, we need housing. Everyone knows we need housing. We need to jumpstart this more. The proposals that she put out there were not as far reaching. There was a lot of stuff about incentives for first-time buyers. There was a lot of mention of incentives for prefabricated homes, which are less expensive and easier for first-time buyers to get into, things like that. I mean, there might be more details that we see during the budget, but right now it's sort of it's proposals that not a lot of people are going to take issue with, whether they're Democrats or Republicans right now.
From that to something that is, in my opinion, very scary. We know about 3D printers. We've heard about ghost guns. And the governor is very concerned about those getting into the wrong hands.
Right. They call them homemade guns, right? And essentially they are. You have a 3D printer, which in a sense is basically you're fashioning a mold for a gun out of plastic. But they can be very deadly weapons. And the reason why law enforcement calls them ghost guns is because if you're doing these out of your kitchen or your dining room, they don't have a serial number or any other identifying things like you might see out of a real gun manufacturer. So they make them untraceable. Sometimes people put the parts together or order from different area, different entities to put these together. So they're untraceable and they're increasing. And the cops say they're confiscating them more. There's no real handle on exactly how fast they're spreading because you're kind of starting from zero when you say how many did you confiscate this year or last year or whatever. But they're certainly proliferating. And so what she wants to do is say that people who sell 3D printers or manufacture 3D printers for sale in New York have to make sure there's not software that allows for the printing of guns in the state. Now, the first thing critics would say was, okay, you know, even if you get that here in New York, there might be issues about commerce and trade and legalities there. But also, what about someone who just prints off these in Pennsylvania or Virginia and brings them up? They realize they can't really stop that. Their idea is that if big states start to do this, New York, California, other states, then maybe at least there'll be some sort of movement, maybe in the Northeast or in other states, maybe not so much in the South, but that, you know, people will understand that there's some dangers in letting people just make guns in their own house.
We are speaking with Yancey Roy, the Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday, on this week's Capital Connection. Well, we've seen a lot of anecdotal evidence that the cell phone ban in the state schools, Yancey, has seen some positives. You know, students are certainly less distracted. We've also heard anecdotally that some are getting around it by putting old phones in the pouches and getting around it. But the governor has been serious about keeping children safe, and that includes blocking messages from predators, disabling AI chatbots, location sharing, and cutting off access to online sports gaming for kids. This is a brave new world. You and I didn't have to deal with this when we were children.
You know, sometimes I kind of laugh and I say, I'm glad that I'm of an age where I'm not in my child rearing age anymore, and I don't have to deal with being a parent right now over and riding herd over some of these issues, unlike some of my friends and colleagues.
Yep.
But it is wild, and it is sort of, you know, how do you rein in any of this? I think that they're making an effort that will probably be widely supported in the legislature. Democrats and Republicans alike are going to say, yes, we don't want kids being targeted by predators. Yes, we don't want them being bombed by advertisers and every second of the day. The question is going to be, you know, how effective can New York be in and of itself when there's a lot of federal issues involved here, too? There's also a lot of big tech advertising and lobbying and influential people who will fight against this. So it's going to be curious to see how two things. One is if they can get legislation through New York, and then if they do, how effective will it be if you just pass only a state law without any kind of federal action?
Yancey, let's just talk straight politics for a few minutes. The governor's race. What in the world? Yancey, I was pretty shocked. I think many of us were. To see Elise Stefanik, the New York congresswoman from the North Country, who didn't get her ambassadorship from the president. So she said, I'm going to run for governor. She went full out. I mean, full out against Kathy Hochul to the point of announcing and releasing an ad. And she'd been attacking Zohran Mamdani in New York City, calling him a jihadist. I mean, she really went all out. And then we see that Bruce Blakeman, the Nassau County executive, would not get out of the race. He stayed in. And the president was lukewarm, ultimately, said he liked both people. And then, I guess, looking at the polls, but saying she wanted to, you know, spend more time with her family, she not only gets out of the governor's race, but says she's getting out of politics. What a shocker.
It is a surprising turnaround. I mean, it looks like, as you mentioned, Stefanik thought and maybe presumed that all the Republicans would be behind her. And when Nassau County Executive Bruce Blakeman decided to test the waters, and from all indications, by the way, it was like he said he's going to explore a run and he's going to try to raise money. And I don't think from our reporting and from all the indications that that Blakeman was committed to, I'm running all the way through the Republican primary. I think he was going to see if he could raise money and bring up a sort of a strong challenge and get people behind him. But as soon as he jumps in and as soon as Trump indicates that he's not going to endorse anyone, Stefanik drops out. And I think that was a surprise. And I think it's interesting because she'd had so many county chairmen, Republican leaders behind her. I think some people were surprised by that, but you know, the thing is, Dave, from I suppose a vantage point of having done this so long, I have the advantage of being able to rattle off any number of people, candidates who said that they were in the governor's race, who said, oh boy, I got all these county chairmen behind me and I've got state political leaders behind me and wanted to tell you that they were going to be the nominee, and just have that turn around quickly. And it's just, it's not just with her, it's with other candidates as well. And so all along, to work back to Blakeman here, all along there were some Republicans saying, look, Blakeman might be a stronger candidate for us against Hochul. Among other things, he's won re-election in Nassau County, not only a huge county population-wise, but a purple county, one that's shifted back and forth between Republicans and Democrats. And at least Stefanik has won only in the very northernmost New York congressional district, which is about 90% white, overwhelmingly Republican, and she had not been tested in a more battleground area.
Also, was he also, was he also pro-choice?
He is pro-choice.
He's pro-choice, yeah.
Now, that's going to come up again through the campaign. Democrats are going to raise the issue of like, okay, you say you're pro-choice, but how much are you? What do you think about all the issues related to health agencies and prescriptions, medication, and what about Medicaid funding, et cetera? That'll start to work out during the campaign. But at least for now, he is saying, look, I'm pro-choice on abortion. And, you know, again, you have to go back to the last Republican governor, George Pataki, who was able to win for a variety of reasons, but one of them, one of the factors was that he was pro-choice on abortion.
Now, what about name recognition, though, Yancey? Didn't Stefanik have bigger name recognition than Blakeman?
Kind of doesn't mean much right now. You've got now from January to November to build your name recognition. Hochul has a generous lead over Blakeman in the polls, 20 points or so, I forget the exact number. He's got to, over the next few months, build up that name recognition and also convince donors that he's got a chance here. We're speaking on the second week of January. There's a couple of milestones coming up that are important. One is January 15th is the reporting date for your latest campaign finance totals. They come in a few days after that. We'll see how much Hochul has. We'll see how much Blakeman has. Beginning of February, Democratic convention, the first week, second week, a Republican convention on Long Island. You have to essentially, and it'll show that Blakeman is way behind in the money chase. But what you need to do if you're the Republican candidate is build some momentum to close the gap in the polls and convince Republican donors to send some money your way. Because if you're within striking distance, he will get a lot of help. If he's not within striking distance, Republican donors are going to go to, oh, I don't know, North Carolina, New Jersey, or some, all these other states where congressional races hang in the balance, and they might skip New York. So, you know, his name recognition is not much right now, but I don't think that that's a critical issue as we speak here in the middle of January.
Then there's this other candidate on the Democratic side. It's the Lieutenant Governor, Antonio Delgado. He was a former congressman from the 19th district. It was a purple district, and he got out, probably because he was going to be too close of an election and he wouldn't win. Then he joins the governor's administration, and we learn after a few years that he's not happy, and he's going to challenge the governor. How much can this hurt?
Well, it's potentially a thorn in her side. Delgado, you talk about name recognition, he does not have a lot of name recognition, but he has been out there trying to raise his profile and talking to a lot of small bore community groups, student groups, progressive groups to try to raise excitement in his candidacy. I mean, it's not unlike trying to catch the energy of Zoran Mamdani, who won the New York mayor's race. He will face issues with name recognition and money. He's also going to face the issue of how to get on the ballot. As we mentioned, the Democratic convention is coming up February 6th in Syracuse. If you get 25% of the vote there, you're on the ballot. If you don't, you have to have your campaign team go around the state and gather petitions to get you on the ballot. It's an onerous task. So he's got some big, big challenges. But taken from their perspective, the idea is that there's a lot of energy in the party on the left, and that he's trying to catch lightning in a bottle and maybe some dissatisfaction with the moderate approach of Hochul and you know, strike big. It's a long shot. It's no secret to say it's a long shot. But I think, you know, Democrats who back Hochul aren't, you know, totally writing off the idea that there's some concern about the left here.
I'm afraid that's going to have to do it. He is Yancey Roy, Albany Bureau Chief for Newsday, joins us from time to time on the Capital Connection to talk about New York State government and politics. And I can't tell you how much I appreciate it, Yancey. And we'll talk to you again real soon. Thank you.
Always a pleasure, Dave.
Support for the Capital Connection comes from
United University Professions, representing 37,000 academic and professional employees at SUNY campuses and teaching hospitals across New York State. Frederick E. Cole, President, UUPinfo.org.